Now we're live.
We're live.
We're live too quick. We're live
so quickly. And welcome to the latest edition of the Comic Book Chronicles. Yay! Our normal host, Tim D-O-double-G, is out of town living the high life. And in his stead, we're here with at PCN underscore dirt.
Yay!
And the man on the soundboard at Agent underscore 70. What's up, everybody? So we are running a two-man weave slash show tonight. That was a sports reference. I know Dirt's not gonna.
I didn't realize that. Was a... I was like, weave. He's making baskets. I don't know.
That's funny. So. Basically, we are running the show this week, and we've got quite a bit to talk about, actually. There's been a lot of announcements this week. As my brand spanking new Nexus 5 phone keeps making funny Google notification noises, I think I'm going to turn that down.
Just to apologize to everybody in advance, I am kind of fighting a cold, so I'm drinking some decaf and trying to get some steam to get into my sinuses, hopefully clear things up, and I hope my voice doesn't cut out at some point.
Oh, let's hope not. Let's hope not, because then you're going to have to hear my dulcet tones the whole time.
Ugh.
Anyway... So I guess what we can start with is our regular segment on comic book related news.
Are you sure about that?
I think we can. Okay. We can start with that.
All right. Well, I do have a couple news stories pulled up here. First up, for every fan of Sandman Overture, first issue came out in October, but it looks like number two isn't coming until February. They've had to... push it back because apparently there are some delays in the process trying to get the art together and finalize certain parts of the story. And Neil Gaiman actually tweeted out to everybody that he apologized. He realizes it's very unprofessional to do this, but it just had to be done. He didn't see any way around it. So,
wow.
Yeah, quite a delay.
What can you do? What can you do? People waiting for new Sandman for this whole time, and that's a pretty big delay. You might
was
be
that,
out of sight, out of mind
a
for a lot of people.
Big book in your store?
I'm sure there's people who are looking for that. The store that I frequent is kind of small, and they got their shipment after a lot of the stores in New York sold out.
Oh, okay.
So the store that I frequent. Had copies after, a lot of different New York stores that sold out. So I think it was a pretty big seller, to my understanding.
Yeah. Around here, it just didn't really seem to make much of a difference.
Gotcha. Well, I hate to call it a niche book, but it sort of is.
Well, it's also one of those things that I think a lot of people who are really looking forward to it are not the regular comic readers. Like, I think a lot of people who read comics and then kind of left Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that kind of brings them back. But a lot of younger people who are reading it now, so they know that Sandman is just something that people older than them read, and they don't really care as much, I don't think.
That might be, you know what, you're probably right, you know, in that regard. I think the majority of the people who read Sandman are probably out of comics, and if they're even close to it, they might be in the digital realm. Mm. And they might have uploaded it to or downloaded it to their iPad iPad minis. It sounds like the plague is going on over there, Dirt.
Everybody in the house has been sick. I'm the last person.
You're the whole.
So.
Okay. Sold out. Well, you know, more power, you know. So, what else we got?
All right. Next up, a. Older DC Universe character has finally made their return in the New 52. Excuse me. This is a character that's actually very near and dear to my heart, a character that I grew up with, I was very fond of, and she's a strong female lead. Okay. She's made her appearance in this week's Justice League of America.
Ooh, something I have not read yet.
She is, in fact... Here, let me see if I can pull up my screen share here.
Let's spoil it for everybody.
Oh, can you see this right here? This is Yankee Poodle.
No.
Yankee Poodle from Captain Carrot and the Amazing Zoo Crew.
Oh, my goodness.
She's made her return as an animated character on the TV screen of Justice League of America.
Wow.
I'm almost going to guess that her reappearance here means at some point in the future they are going to find the universe where Captain Carrot and the Amazing Zoo Crew are real, and they can do all those fun crossovers again.
You got to be kidding me. They're really breaking out they're pulling out all the stops with the New 52.
I love it. I love it.
Old is new again.
Let's see here. We've got news that Wolverine and the X-Men is going to be ending.
Yes.
Looks like it's ending with number 42.
Yes. This is part of the news that broke with Marvel Comics' solicitations for what month? February?
Yeah, for the February.
The February solicitations were released today, and we can even go through.
Fearless Defenders is ending. I don't know if everybody thinks about that. Wolverine the X-Men is ending. The regular Wolverine series is ending. Correct. Young Avengers is ending.
Yes.
But, of course, Wolverine is coming back with a new series.
Yes, with Ryan Stegman on art and
it's the same writer.
Oh, it's the same team? Oh, it's Jason Aaron?
No, it's Paul Cornell.
Oh, Paul Cornell. That's right.
But a lot of people are also speculating that Young Avengers will somehow be reconstituted. Maybe even with some of the characters from Wolverine and the X-Men, and they'll do some sort of young Avengers versus X-Men or young uncanny Avengers men or something.
That's all I have to say about that. Oh, mercy.
The best comment I saw, though, on Young Avengers being canceled is someone posted a comment on Facebook that said, well, at least now I don't have to hear every month about how this is the greatest comic being published and the future of the comic book industry. Because that's how they touted it when it came out, and now it's getting canceled.
That's right. So just very quickly, I'm going to click through Newsarama's usual feature, what we learned from Marvel Comics' latest solicitations. Skip past number 10 and jump to number 9. Dexter is back with an all-new story in Dexter Down Under, a new 5-issue miniseries by the original creator of the character. So that's kind of cool for fans of the show. Mm-hmm. Number 8, Death's Head is in the spotlight. We've talked about this before. They leaked some stuff at New York Comic Con about the Marvel UK characters being Marvel UK characters coming back in a big way, and they're doing this Revolutionary War event. So if anyone's interested in these Marvel UK characters, they are coming back in a big way. Uncanny Avengers guest starring everyone. So it looks like Uncanny Avengers is trying to recapture some magic and I guess recapture some momentum. I think it's kind of lost its way, and they're going to use a whole bunch of guest stars coming up in the February storyline. So we'll see how that goes. Avengers versus New Avengers coming. Really, who cares? Seriously, I'm an Avengers fan, and I don't even care about that. Come on now. Next, introducing the Sisterhood. I thought this was kind of interesting, where we have Lady Deathstrike organizing her own band of female ne'er-do-wells. Among them, Typhoid Mary, Enchantress, and possibly more. So that's going to be an interesting group of villains for this adjectiveless X-Men team to challenge the mostly female team that Brian Wood is writing.
Okay, so they make a female X-Men team highlighting some of the female characters, so they have to make an evil female team for them to fight because why? They're not good enough to fight the male bad guy teams?
I don't know if I'd say that, or if we just want to see some...
It just seems like that's
action.
I just kind of hate when they do that, though, because then it seems to like marginalize the characters when you say,
I agree.
You know, the guys have to fight the guys and the girls have to fight the girls because the girls apparently aren't good enough to fight the male villains, you know? And if you want to create a strong female villain, she can fight the male good guys. I mean, I don't understand why they always have to do that. That just seems silly to me.
It does, but at the same time, I just see the way the gears and the writers' heads are working. They're trying to, I guess, you know, when was the last time we saw Lady Deathstrike, really? You know, when was the last time we've seen the Enchantress? She really hasn't played much of a role in the Thor books. So, yeah. You know, I think ultimately, or maybe she was in Fearless Defenders. I'm not 100%. Oh, maybe that was like an alternate Enchantress. But anyway. Ultimately, right, ultimately, if a lot of these characters aren't being used in some of the more traditional backdrops, you know, I can, you know, there is some sort of, like, weird logic, you know, just, like you said.
I just wish they would do something where if they are going to put together a female villain team, have them appear in a different book first to establish them, and then have them make their way to that title.
Right.
That way it's not, because it feels pandering, you know? And I understand the idea that little girls are reading it and they want to see, you know, girl heroes and girl villains so that they have characters that they can relate to. And I understand the idea behind that, and that's fine. But, I mean, if that's what you're going to do, then establish these as actual characters of the world, a team that everybody is worried about, and the girl team happens to be the one that steps up and defeats them instead of making it, you know, because that's one reason why I hated Batwoman when she started appearing in the Bat books, because she appears and suddenly this villain appears that you've never seen before, who's this gothic porcelain doll female villain, you know, like just handmade for this version of Batwoman, because apparently Batwoman can't fight Killer Croc and Penguin and Two-Face and everybody else. You know what I mean? And it's not like they took established characters, female characters like Poison Ivy, you know, and said, oh, well, Batwoman can fight Poison Ivy if you want to have a female character. They have to create this new one who has this, you know, stylistic sensibility that's going to fit into that slice of where they're putting Batwoman. And it's just kind of like, to me, that just kind of dumbs down the whole thing.
Gotcha. All right. Well, you know, it's definitely a valid point of view, I think. Moving on, we have A Tale of Two Thors and Galactus. So Jason Aaron's, I think acclaimed run, forget critically acclaimed, run on Thor God of Thunder is moving along at a great, you know, great pace. And in February, we're doing a little bit more, not time travel, but looking at a future version of Thor, where that future version of Thor is going to be fighting Galactus, while the current day Thor, the Avenger Thor, is joining forces with his new female love interest, who is an environmentalist. She's and they're going to be taking on the CEO of Roxxon, the corporation Roxxon, the always infamous amalgamation of every evil corporation on Earth, all rolled into one. That's Roxxon in the Marvel U.
Right.
We have, what is this? A new in continuity Peter Parker story in 8 plus X number 17? Could it be the return of?
No.
Boo.
No, it cannot be.
But we have here, over in Superior Spider-Man, the Green Goblin makes his presence known as Goblin Nation kicks off. The key phrase in that solicitation text, though, is this the end starts here? Bum, bum, bum.
The end of the Green Goblin. I'm fine with that. They can do the end of the Green Goblin.
Otto's going down.
No.
Now, this is something I noticed right off the bat going through the Marvel solicitations during my lunch break / when I wasn't doing work in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. And on the train ride home, I'm scrolling through the solicits. It's raining number ones at Marvel in February. We have Wolverine number one by Paul Cornell and Ryan Stegman. We have a Fantastic Four number one by James Robinson and Larry Kirk. We have a Ms. Marvel number one, which I'm sure you guys talked about last week, right?
Right, yep.
The Ms. Marvel number one by G. Willow Wilson and Adrian Alfona. Glad that Adrian Alfona has a steady gig again. A new Punisher by the Activity team of Nathan Edmondson and Mitch Gerards.
Yeah, that looks fantastic, by the way.
I'm looking forward to that. That may be the first continuing Punisher book I get, I haven't gotten one in a long time.
Do you
time.
Have the full solicit there with you, or is it just listing off the number ones?
I can pull up the full solicit.
Do you know if that Punisher is a $2.99 or a $3.99 book?
I will pull it up in a second. Let me scroll through and see if I can't find it.
Well, I could have looked it up. I just didn't know if you had it right there in front of you.
Well, I have it in front of me, but I have to scroll through the silly thing and find it. Here we go. The Punisher 1 and 2, $3.99 each. I found it.
Okay. All right, good. That means that they are packed with the digital copy. Mm. I've noticed that Marvel books that launch at $2.99 and don't have the digital copy tend to be books that they don't have as much faith in.
Right.
But when it launches at $3.99 with the digital copy, they are titles that they seem to think are going to be sticking around for a while.
Gotcha.
That makes me a lot happier about that book.
Cool. Well, it's a mix of all that. It's a mix of all that. It's like, all right, that makes you happy. I hope that it lasts. I hope that, you know, this team, you know, listen, they do good work on the Activity.
Right.
And I want them to really make a good Punisher book. It's been a long time. Just to finish up the number one parade, we have the She-Hulk number one by Charles Soule, who, seriously, I don't know how he does it. I can barely read books during the week. How does he write them? And have a law practice.
And he's in a band, isn't he?
Yeah. Oh, geez, don't get me started. Winter Soldier, The Bitter March, that miniseries by Remender and Roland Boschi that I'm looking forward to, launches in February. Mm-hmm. New Warriors number one by Chris Yost and Marcus Toe. Loki, Agent of Asgard by Al Ewing and Lee Garbett. Mm-hmm. And X-Force number one by Cy Spurrier and Rock Hae Kim. That's a lot of number ones, a lot of books to try out in February. Get your pull list ready, people. Get your pull list ready. And finally, what we learned from Marvel solicitations, we talked about this before, just as announced last month, Daredevil 36 is the final issue of that particular version of the series, that volume of the series. Wolverine and the X-Men is ending also, right. And that's a surprising ending. I wonder what's going to happen to bring the story of the Jean Grey school to a close.
Well, it may be one of those things, though, where it just kind of ends. Like, tomorrow is another day, you know, the issue ends. There might not be any sort of real end cap on it, because it may be one of those things that they plan to go back to in some other storyline or some crossover or something, you know, 6 months down the line.
Or are they just going to disband the school? I'm kind of curious. It's kind of shame. It's a shame because I actually like reading this book, and I actually like a lot of the characters that they've introduced, as opposed to the Uncanny book. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they had to re-energize the Uncanny side by what happened in All New X-Men this week. Mm-hmm. To be perfectly honest, I think that was, you know, a jolt. In that story, you know, to kind of put it in the sense of, you know, to relate it in the terms of the schism, they had to re-energize the Cyclops side.
Yeah.
So.
Well, because nobody likes Cyclops anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. Classic shots fired. Classic materia. Shots fired.
Well, hey, if Classic is listening, now's his time to pipe up. If he still likes Scott Summers and thinks there's something to the Cyclops character. Nope, don't hear it. So he's given up on Cyclops as well.
Classic material is out there listening out in the ether. And finally, X-Men Legacy number 24, which is a book I don't think we've ever really talked about on the show, because I don't think anyone really wants to read the stories of Legion.
No.
You know, Charles Xavier's son. That is ending in February. So you know what? Rest in peace. That's all I got to say about that. Did you happen to go through the DC solicits? I know those came out earlier this
week. No, I mean, I didn't go through them in depth or anything, but I did mm-hmm. see there are a couple of notes that there are some big changes coming to the DC Universe in 2014, and they've had little hints of it here and there. One of them is that, you know, Forever Evil will be wrapping up in a couple months. And most people, I don't think they really thought about how big the storyline was, that it's seven issues, that's 7 months that storyline goes on.
Right.
When that wraps up is when certain things that we've been hearing about are going to kick in, where Justice League of America becomes Justice League Canada. Apparently Booster Gold is going to be rebooted or reintroduced in some sort of way. There was a character.
I'm like, is that applause worthy? I don't know.
I mean, I liked the Justice League International series that lasted the first year of the New 52. But I always liked Booster Gold. I always liked the time travel stuff. But Booster Gold and Blue Beetle were really the team. And when they killed off Blue Beetle, it just seemed like Booster Gold really didn't have that character to bounce off of anymore. Let's see. What else do we have?
Let's see if there's any more news to talk about.
Oh, apparently the creative teams on Detective and Red Hood and the Outlaws are swapping.
Oh.
So the writers and artists are just going to switch to different books.
Okay, okay.
And that's kind of a weird thing, but, you know, what else?
Miracle Man.
I wanted new to mention stories this, for even Miracle though, Man, aren't there?
Exactly. They are coming out. They will be coming out not very soon. Apparently, the new stories will be coming out, 2016 or something like 2015? But they're going to be publishing in January. After a long process of preparation by Marvel Comics, they're going to be reissuing, reprinting in remastered colors the Alan Moore, who's going by original writer, right? That's right. He's going by original writer and the Neil Gaiman and Mark Buckingham.
Oh, right.
Those are going to be what comes out in another year or two. Those are not going to be coming out, you know, like continue Gaiman and Buckingham's original story. That's what they plan on putting out. And that's not going to be for a while. 2016, that's it. Let's say for looking at that, for the continuation of the Miracle Man stories.
Did you read the Miracle Man stuff that came out, Marvel Man stuff, whatever, that came out like 3 years ago, I think it was?
Oh, you mean the original Mick Anglo stuff?
When Marvel reprinted that stuff a couple years ago?
I bought one of the issues, but I have to tell you, I am waiting for the remastered copies of the Alan Moore stuff, because just like everyone else who claims to have read it, we read it online. And I liked it. I liked it. I did. So I'm looking forward to getting a hard copy in remastered color. Mm-hmm. I am.
So you're letting them make a legitimate lady out of you yet.
That's right. Listen, I read a lot of legitimate hard copy comics, but I'm very happy to say that, you know, this is a product that I'm looking forward to because, you know, this is, you know, I don't want to say it lives up to the hype, but it's very good. I think people do overhype things, and I think, you know, as long as you don't go into it with ridiculously high expectations, you will enjoy the book and you will understand some of the hype behind it.
All right. So any other news that you got?
I don't have – Guillermo del Toro, who's working on the Justice League Dark movie, has posted that has announced that the movie will be part of the shared DC movie universe. Mm. So that's nice to hear that they're trying to all work together. And did you want to talk about that video with the DC All Access video with Dan Didio and Jim Lee talking about the move to California?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it?
No.
Well, just very quickly, some possible red herring slash. It could just be a tease. Some possible news broke via the background in this video of some writing on a whiteboard with the names Wally, Donna, and Stephanie being associated with certain books. And when we say those names, we mean Wally West, Donna Troy, and Stephanie Brown. So I'm happy to see Wally and Donna come back. What the hell is Stephanie Brown? Where's the drum?
I'm more interested with Stephanie Brown than Donna Troy.
Spoken like someone who didn't read the old school New Teen Titans.
I did read the old school Teen Titans, but after they hit that point where
she turned into Troya?
Yeah. And,
oh, Lord. Don't get me started on Donna Troy.
So anyway, one last story I want to bring up.
Go ahead.
There is an illustrator named Tess Fowler who's been working on the independent scene for several years. She made some comments. I don't know how recently they were, but just saying that a major person in the comic book industry, often promoted as being a defender of feminists and working with strong female characters, is actually a misogynist, someone who, married, has kids, and yet still tries to lure young illustrators up to his hotel room and tries to be, you know, play some of those sleazy games.
Really? And,
but she didn't say who it was. She wouldn't, she said it's not about making this one guy the target, but it was about bringing up the issue of what's happening in the comic book industry. Well, apparently some other female creator made some comment about this particular person, and so she actually came out and said that, yes, the person she was talking about is Brian Wood. Brian Wood, who does Saga, does a bunch of random stuff for Marvel. Does the X-Men team with the female characters.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, she said that she was at a convention, and someone... mutual friend of a friend of a friend said something to him that she was working on a book and trying to do some illustrations and whatever. And so he made his way over to her and basically cut off the conversation that she was having with other friends so that he could have her attention and tried to, play up this story about if, she wanted to, she could bring all her stuff up to his hotel room. He'd take a look at it, read it over, let her know what he thought about it. And she kind of got a creepy vibe and said, I've got some other stuff going on. I don't think so. And he apparently told her the hotel room and said, stop by at this time and left, assuming that she was going to go there. She didn't. And so the next day at this convention, while she's walking around with some other friends, he apparently, at his table in the artist's alley, started yelling at her and calling her worthless and saying that her work was terrible and he didn't even care about it and she needs to stop wasting everybody's time.
Wow.
And all of this kind of stuff. So she goes, no, you know, kidding. She goes, she never wanted to really call out him specifically. She's only mentioning that because it's come up with somebody else. But it was more about the fact that, you know, he is someone who is portrayed as being such a strong, I don't know if you'd call him kind of a feminist.
Yeah. Progressive voice in the comic book industry in terms of like the female character. I gotcha.
Right, right. And so he's actually part of this culture. And, you know, she says it happens in every industry. It happens, you know, no matter where you go or what you do. But the fact that so many people don't even bother to, you know, she's not the first person. She won't be the last person. There have been other people that have said things, and it's always been ignored. And it's always been kind of brushed under the table, and people don't want to believe it, so they just don't. And so she wants to make it very clear that he is just basically one of those predators, and everybody holds him up. And she says, you know, the thing is, like, in a month, most people are just going to forget about this and ignore it, and it'll just move on to somebody else, and that'll be the end of it. Hmm. So that kind of a scary story.
Yeah, not the best story to hear about you know, about a comic book creator and what it's like to be working as a female creator in the comic book world.
And apparently, also, when she started to, you know, mention that this is who it was, that it was Brian Wood, she started to get emails and tweets from a bunch of other people that said the same thing happened with them.
Wow.
With Brian Wood specifically. Mm-hmm. So Bleeding Cool even posted something about the story, and they shut off the comment section. They wouldn't even allow people to reply to it, make comments about it.
Because it was getting that crazy.
Because it was, I think they're just afraid of a lawsuit or something coming out of it, you know.
Wow.
Mm-mm-mm. But yeah, so apparently that's Brian.
I'm disappointed to hear that, and I guess I'm going to have to read up on that and find out about that. I've never met Brian Wood in person, you know, not at the New York Comic Con at least, or at least I don't remember it.
Right.
So, you know, I'm very disappointed to hear that. Very disappointed to hear that.
Absolutely. So, anyway.
All righty.
I think that's
good. Yeah. After that downer.
Just kill the mood.
Seriously. I'm like, we had a great vibe going. We were talking about solicits and all the new stuff. Is there any good news that we can share now? Yeesh.
We covered all the good stuff already.
I know. What are you going to do? Oh, I got Man of Steel on Blu-ray and DVD and Ultraviolet combo.
Did you watch any of it yet?
Hell no. You think I have time? I'm not Charles Sewell.
You haven't even read more than, what, 3 comics this week?
That's right. No doubt. But that came out this week. I didn't even realize that it was that it came out this week and not last week. I literally just walked into Best Buy for something else. And I was like, ooh, you know, they put it up front where the impulse purchases are. Mm. And I'm just like, oh, wait, Blu-ray, DVD, this fulfills my requirements. I will pick this up.
You're checking out the PlayStation 4 pre-order?
I did not. I am actually leaning towards getting an Xbox One, believe it or not.
Big mistake.
I've heard so many things on both sides. Right now I'm swayed, but I'm also not an early adopter.
Yeah.
So I may be waiting it out just to see how things shake out in terms of early bugs and stuff like that. How about you, Dirt?
I'll probably go with the PS4, but I'll probably buy it in like 2.5-3 years when the price comes way down, you know. Right. And I've got games. Like, I work in a store where people trade in games.
Sure.
So a lot of times I can get a game for like $2, you know, $3 when someone trades it in. So I've got a handful of games that I just don't have time to get to, or I know that because of the violence and language, I'm not going to play them around the kids, you know, so I would have to play them late at night, you know, or something like that. So I really have no interest in picking up one of these consoles. At least for a long time, because I just know that I've got, you know, stuff to play to keep me entertained for a while. Yeah,
it sounds like a backlog. You know what it is for me. I don't have time to play that many games. I definitely just, I'm very deliberate when it comes to choosing games. A lot of them are just superhero based. I'll dabble in the sports related games, and I'm not a first person shooter guy. You know, I don't have time to sit online and just try to kill like 12-year-old kids who are running after me with machine guns, right? So
I tend to do a lot more with portable gaming or like on my tablet. You know, when I can walk around the house with it and I can, you know, do something else, you know, play for a little bit and set it down.
Sure.
You know, grab something and then pick it back up and, you know, a few minutes later keep playing. As opposed right. to when it's on the TV, there's you can't do anything else with the TV. You're stuck there, you know, all that kind
I
of stuff.
I can understand. I can understand that. I'm definitely, I can appreciate the console experience. I just don't think that I play enough to justify the purchase right now.
Especially,
you know, like you said, I have – go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, especially at $400 or $500.
Right. I have a PS3 right now. It works perfectly fine. I don't know what new games I'm going to buy for it right now. I haven't bought. Have you played Arkham? What's the latest Batman Arkham game? Origins.
I know what game you. Yeah, I haven't played it yet. I know.
I haven't played it yet. I have not played that. I don't know if someone's going to surprise me. With that for Christmas, I don't know. And I only know I haven't got the foggiest idea when I would even be able to play it. So, you know, yeah. Well, we'll see. I can definitely sympathize, you know, when it comes to pre-ordering. I'm not in that boat. But, you know, my friends have been debating this online. And quite a few people have swayed my thinking in terms of the Xbox. And I think probably just before we move off this topic, my thinking on this was, since I have a PS3, maybe it's time to get the Xbox side and see how that rolls.
Mm.
You know, that's one way to look at it. So we'll see.
Or buy a 360 now that you can pick one up for like $150 and play all the games that you've missed the last few years.
That's right. I don't know how Xbox Live is going to be supported either, but they've got to keep it all sort of on the same. I guess if you've got a one, you're playing on a different type of Xbox Live.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how it works, but I never play online with other people anyway. Like, the only reason why I have any of those type accounts is for Netflix and Amazon On Demand and all of that kind of stuff.
Right.
But I get a game and I do the storyline mode and then I may do the story again if it's good.
Right.
But otherwise I just online is not the way I like to play.
Right. There's definitely certain types of games where you're actually looking for the challenge, like those first person shooters or even racing games. If you ever play, you know, like a driving game, that's actually something where I've played online just looking for, you know, people to drive against. Mm. But if you're not into that, then, you know, the online component really isn't all that useful.
All right. Let's move back to comics.
Moving back.
Let's see. Where are we going to start this week? Avatar.
What do you got? Avatar.
I didn't read anything.
Ah!
Frost came out this week, but didn't read it.
All right. So let's drop a couple of names as we move along. Let's see. Boom. Anything in Boom?
Actually, yes.
What do you got?
Let me get my... Where's my share screen at? Screen share. Here we go. Protocol Orphans was a new series that came out this week from Boom Studios. Michael Alan Nelson is the writer. He's been doing some work on Supergirl. He did some on Teen Titans. But the title he did that really caught my attention a couple of years ago was 28 Days Later. He did a continuation of the first movie.
Okay.
And the comic series, way better than the first movie, 1,000 times better than the second movie. And it was a series that I said this and I stick by it. If Walking Dead was not being published, 28 Days Later would be the zombie book everybody was talking about.
I agree.
But because of Walking Dead, you know, and it was just a movie tie-in book that a lot of people didn't pay any attention to. But he did some great, great stuff in that series. So I picked this one up, Protocol Orphans. It's basically a secret government agency that kidnaps basically orphan children and raises them to be assassins for the government. And the team goes on their first mission, which turns out to be like a test run. Like, they don't realize that they're being used as like a test to see how good they actually are.
Right.
But the test doesn't go the way it's supposed to, and they find out that there's something else going on. There's another player on the board, so to speak, with the espionage between the government assassins. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was really well done, and I'm looking forward to the next issue.
How is the art inside? I like that cover.
The art inside is really good. In fact, awesome. It might be the same guy who did the cover, actually. It did have a nice, clean look to it on the inside.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. I look forward to checking that out.
That was good. Three Guns, issue 4 came out, which all I right. love this series. I haven't had a chance to read this book yet, though. It was one of the ones I was going to get to this afternoon, mm-hmm. and then I forgot about the dance recital, or not dance recital, musical tonight.
That's right.
That I got to go see. So I didn't get a chance to read it yet, but I love this series. I still haven't seen the movie that was based off of Two Guns.
I have not either.
I love the original series, so I want to watch the movie at some point. I just haven't had a chance to get to it yet.
Okay.
Let's see. Anything else from Boom? Sons of Anarchy came out, but I mean, right. I don't watch the show, so I haven't read it. I don't know anything about that.
Right. The reprint of Hero Bear and the Kid, The Inheritance number 4 came out. I want to get around to reading that.
It was a reprint?
Yeah, this is. I guess this issue. I guess the series was released a number of years ago, if I'm not mistaken. Correct?
It was.
I'm pretty sure we've discussed this book a couple times already, and I'm pretty sure that this has been released prior to this, and this is a re-release of the series.
Hold on a second. Hold
Just
your
hold
horses.
Your horses. As we consult Google in a hurry.
Well, actually, I was going to say I have this from I think Comixology, so I'm pulling it up to see if I've got it downloaded on here. I can take a look at it real quick. Uh-oh, what happened?
Hello, Wikipedia.
All right, I don't see it there. I don't have it there.
Hero Bear and the Kid is a monthly comic book and won the Eisner Award for Best Title for Younger Readers, Best Comics Publication for a Younger Audience in both 2002 and 2003.
Yeah, but I don't think this... Well, I don't know. Hold on. Okay, The Sonic Factory, The Inheritance. Well, what do you know?
Aha!
Hey, Agent 70 was right about something for once.
Ah!
2003.
There you go. There you go. Well, you see, at the end of the day, I'm happy that it's being re-released and reprinted because it's introducing this great story to, you know, a new fan base.
My son loves this. They also did the Halloween annual last week.
Right.
So we read through that. Now, that may have been new. Maybe that was new. I don't know.
Maybe. Maybe. But I'm looking forward to either picking up the newer trade or going back on, you know, either through backlists or Amazon, picking up the older trades and maybe giving those out as gifts because I'm, in, you know, I really love this story.
Yeah. Well, and it's also because the artwork in the story is this pencil sketch kind of look to it. It doesn't right. look like anything else on the market.
Correct.
So that's really cool.
It's very attractive. I really like the I really like the style of the art. So.
Okay. All right. So that's Boom.
Dark Horse. Anybody? Am I skipping past something?
Well, Aspen had the swimsuit special this week.
Oh, come on now. How could we miss that?
Oh, here, wait. I've got a cover because we sold this. There you go. The Aspen
wow.
Splash 2013 Swimsuit Spectacular.
Now let's have a moment to applaud and trumpet.
I hear this is Brian Wood's favorite book.
Ah!
That's going to be the new ongoing joke with that.
Oh, Brian Wood. What are you going to do? So what do we have next?
All right, so let's just go to DC then.
Oh, nobody read anything Dark Horse? Oh, lame.
What was Dark Horse this week?
There was a no,
X, yeah, Star Wars
11.
Clown Fatale.
Yeah.
which
I didn't Shaolin Cowboy, anybody? Bueller?
You know, I was told that I need to read that. I haven't read, this is like issue 2, I think, that just came out of Shaolin Cowboy.
Yes.
And I've been told I need to read it, so I'll probably try to get to that this weekend.
Sounds good. Sounds good. Give that a shot. All right, so I guess we will jump straight to DC and to the book that I should have read but did not read, Astro City number 6.
And why should you have read it?
Because I'm trying to support this book with positive word of mouth on the show, and I haven't read it. It's terrible of me.
That doesn't really help the image of the book when you like it and you're not willing to read it.
I'm giving myself the gong. You know, just you know what? Blame the clients. That's all I have to say. Blame my chosen field of work.
All right, let's see. What else do we have this week?
Batgirl, anybody?
Well, here. We had Batman 25, which was the start of the big blackout in Gotham City, the oncoming hurricane. This actually played with some of the relationship between Jim Gordon and Bruce Wayne.
Okay.
In some fun ways. I think, I don't remember if it was this or Detective Comics, but one of those had young Harvey Bullock in it, which I found to be...
was he skinny?
Quite entertaining. He was thick, but he wasn't like the big fat guy we all know from later on.
Gotcha.
But yeah, this was an oversized issue. This was the... I don't want to say oversized. It had a cardstock cover. It was a thick, you know, one of those embossed covers. So it's something that you'll put in your collection and, you know,
And they'll never go up in value.
Probably not. let's see. I was thinking we had Forever Evil Arkham War.
Okay.
Which continued the story of Bane trying to take over Gotham City. And this cover is really kind of misleading because it shows all the Talons coming into attack, and the Talons are in this book, but they're frozen in cryogenic storage, so they never actually wake up or do anything in this issue.
So they're not exactly rising. That's pretty misleading.
They did not rise.
My goodness.
I mean, they rise in importance. Like, people are fighting over who gets to thaw them out and use them, but no, it doesn't actually happen. But I still like this story. I think it's it shows that this particular issue shows that, on the one hand, you've got the Arkham faction, which is all the traditional Batman villains kind of working together to carve up the city and make it their own. Then you've got Bane, and Bane took over Blackgate Prison. And that's his faction of all of those of the hardened criminals who are trying to take over the city for themselves. But then there's a third faction arising with Commissioner Gordon. He is breaking the warden out of Blackgate and finding the handful of police officers that are still alive out there. And he is building his own faction of the police.
Okay.
So it's interesting to see how these different groups are kind of interacting, and Penguin is the one guy who's trying to play both sides.
He's kind of a wild card. I got you.
Yeah, he's working with Bane, but then he's also working with the rest of the Arkham villains. So that's made that interesting. We had Suicide Squad, which is another tie-in for Forever Evil. Last issue, you had Amanda Waller sent in one team of, her Suicide Squad team in to find OMAC. And then she started contacting these other heroes like Steel and the Unknown Soldier and Power Girl, and also sent them in to find OMAC. And you find out that the second team wasn't sent in by Amanda Waller. It was actually sent in by the Calculator, who used a hologram to fake Amanda Waller and sent in the second team in the hopes that... they would kill OMAC and OMAC would die, because for whatever reason the crime syndicate, the bad guys, they are afraid of OMAC. They think there's something more to him that for some reason we haven't figured out yet.
Yeah, because we don't care.
Right.
They have a reason to care. We don't. We have to find, you know, they're trying to sell that we need to know.
Well, it makes me wonder if he's not going to, like, this is going to be one of the under the current books, but suddenly Omak is going to appear in the main story and have a bigger purpose.
Right.
And they do show off.
Yeah, I was going to say, if there's any place to do it, now's the time.
Right. Let's see here. What else we have? We had Justice League of America with the aforementioned first appearance of Yankee Poodle in the New 52. And John Jones, he finds his own personal prison, his own cell, his own hell within here, and has to fight against it. And, you know, the lore with Martian Manhunter was always that he has, like, this weakness to fire.
Fire.
Like, yeah. He's a Martian, and he sees the fire, and the fire drains him of his powers.
Fire.
You find out he doesn't actually... Fire doesn't actually do anything to him physically. It's all mental.
Typical.
So you find out in this issue why it's a mental problem for him.
Spoiler!
Well, I'm not going to say what it is, but you do find out why it's an issue and how he tries to power through it.
Gotcha.
We had Superman Wonder Woman number 2. This was actually a lot of fun.
Hold on. Did you tweet something about Green Lantern Corps number 25, or are you just saving that?
I did. I'm saving that.
Okay, you're saving. Okay, let me. I'll shut up now, and you go on.
I'm not doing these in order. I just have them all sitting in a folder. Okay. Here, so.
Gotcha.
Superman, Wonder Woman. In the last issue, we didn't give away the spoiler, but basically Doomsday appears at the end, out of nowhere.
Right.
So in this issue, Doomsday disappears as quickly as he appeared at the end of the last issue. And Superman, when Wonder Woman describes this monster, Superman realizes who he is. So he takes Wonder Woman, shows her the Phantom Zone. And Doomsday is actually in the Phantom Zone because he was a weapon created on Krypton. And instead of what happened in the old DC universe, where apparently they put him in a big metal box and just shoved him out into space, and he landed on Earth thousands of years ago, in this continuity, they realized that he was a monster that they couldn't control, and so they shoved him into the Phantom Zone. And so Superman realizes that the reason why Doomsday kind of popped in and popped out is because there's something wrong with the Phantom Zone, and the walls of the Phantom Zone are starting to fall.
Oh, no.
Which means
is
that
someone punching them? Is someone punching them?
Not exactly. But they actually go to Wonder Woman's side of the DC universe, and they go to what's his face? I can't think of his name, but he's the one that makes all the weapons.
Hephaestus?
Yes. Yes. That's
I know my Greek mythology.
And so they go to meet him, and... Apollo shows up, and Apollo and Superman get into a fight. It's basically one of those, I don't know if you want to say it's like a jealous boyfriend syndrome type thing, but Superman, mm-hmm. because all these other people start to appear, he feels like he's got to kind of show off, you know, and look good in front of Wonder Woman and her kind.
Really?
So it was actually fun.
Oh, Lord.
For what that was.
My goodness.
We had the new issue of Superboy, which is part 2 of Krypton Returns. In the old DC universe, you had the Eradicator, who was this like embodiment of the knowledge of Krypton. And he was somehow reborn through the Matrix, which was the ship that actually rocketed Superman to Earth. In the new continuity, the Eradicator somehow has been created from the destruction of Krypton and is able to travel through time and space and is trying to find all the Kryptonians and kill them because that's the destiny of Krypton. Is that everybody on Krypton is supposed to die, so therefore these people who have somehow escaped, it needs to track them down and kill them.
Oh, that's cheery.
Yeah, so playing with the name a little bit, but not so much the concept. It's all right, but, I mean, it's Superboy, so this version of Superboy apparently is not going to last past the next couple issues. They've already kind of spoiled the fact that there's going to be a different Superboy that's going to be taking over the title, so apparently Eradicator's going to win on that one. Let's see, anything else before I get to it? All right, I guess just have to get to
Nightwing number 25.
I didn't read Nightwing.
I want to read it. You know, I want to find out what happens to Nightwing. So, you know, it's a shame I couldn't get to that.
Let's see, there's Nightwing. I have not been reading this regularly, so I have no idea what's going on in the book.
Oh, but this is a 0-year tie-in.
Yes.
It's not, it's not a Forever Evil tie-in. So I guess we'll find out what happens to Nightwing in Forever Evil limited series.
Oh, yeah, that's right, because he's captured right now. I'd forgotten
about that. Right. So this is I thought maybe this would be, describing what's going on in Forever Evil, but I guess not.
This other 0-year tie-in of Green Lantern Corps, this is, I don't even know where to begin on this.
Uh-oh. Okay, wait. It's rant time. Let's see if there's an appropriate sound effect. Wait, drum roll, please. We now have a PCN underscore dirt rant.
So basically, John Stewart, during 0 Year, is part of the Marine Corps, and they go into the Gotham Superdome in order to rescue all the people who are holed up there before the hurricane hits. So it's like it's Hurricane Katrina. They're doing a Katrina story. And as he's going in, he has this flashback to when he was with his mom as a young kid. And his mom is this paid protester who's against the automobile industry because they aren't paying the workers enough and giving them a fat enough pension and, you know, whatever. And she tells him this story. And as she's telling the story, it's flipping between him inside the Superdome and him and the story of what happened supposedly in the past. And the story that she tells him goes something like this. In the African-American community where they lived, some guys came home from Vietnam. They wanted to throw a party to him, a party for the guys coming back from Vietnam. So they, rent out some restaurant, and they're having this party. And the restaurant doesn't have a liquor license, but they've brought in all this alcohol for the party. So the police come in to bust up the party because they say, you don't have a liquor license. You can't be serving this alcohol here. Well, for whatever reason, the fact that the police would come in and try to shut down their party sets off this riot.
Oh my gosh.
And because of this riot that breaks out, every police officer and every member of the National Guard are dirty, racist, white privilege, just want to bring the man down or bring the be the man, you know, and hold down the little people. And every person who is part of this community is obviously the most upstanding, family-oriented, law-abiding citizen who's just getting hassled and can't understand why they're being hassled. I mean, and that is literally the story. The police come in because they don't have a liquor license and they're selling alcohol as part of this party, and this sets off this riot because how dare they come in and tell us that we can't do this. Now, while that story is being told in the past, then this story of them at the Superdome, Anarchy, the character from Batman of Days Past, is reappearing. And he is one of these, Occupy, you know, he's got the mask on so you can't see who he is, but he's wearing, the hooded sweatshirt and the baggy jeans. And he's telling people to rise up and fight against this tyranny of government. And so, of course, the leader of this group of Marines is an old white guy who wants to kill all of these people. And John Stewart says, why would you kill all these people who are rising up against us? They're just normal people who've been led the wrong way by the wrong people. And he's like, they're shooting at us. These are people with guns trying to kill us. You shoot them back in order to save other lives. But, of course, John Stewart figures out how to take two flashbang grenades and tie them together and throw it underneath their legs so it goes off and everybody's stunned, and then they can make an escape. instead of having to shoot everybody. And so when they leave, they leave the Superdome, and they're standing outside, and they're, you know, all the people who want to leave can now leave, and all the people who are going to fight with anarchy are running off scared and whatever. And as he's standing there, he decides to just stare off into space and have a conversation with himself where he talks about, well, I could go back to the Marine Corps, but I'm not going to have a life anymore because that colonel's going to make my life hell. So I don't know what else I'm supposed to do, but I'm supposed to help people because that's what I'm here for. And of course, as he's saying this, Batman finally appears on the scene and happens to hear him say this monologue. But then Batman leaves before John Stewart can turn around and see him.
Hmm.
And that's the end of the book. So it's like, not only his monologue at the end was stupid, and the fact that he stands there and says it out loud is stupid, and the fact that Batman pops in just to hear it and then he leaves is stupid. The fact that they make this a Hurricane Katrina thing, but they try to tie in like the Occupy whatever, but the Occupy are bad guys, but the people who are listening to it are not bad guys because they're just being misled. And this story of this riot where all these people can't understand why the man is hassling them because they're selling liquor and they don't have an alcohol license, which leads to days and days of riots. And every single person involved in this was obviously a good person. But how dare the cops come in with their guns? And that's what sets off all the violence. Like, from top to bottom, there was absolutely nothing of this. The zero-year tie-in was bad. The Hurricane Katrina thing was bad. The story from the past was bad. Like, there is nothing redeemable or likable or interesting or intelligent about this issue. Like, I hated absolutely everything about this book, except maybe the artwork. May have been okay.
Hmm. The views the expressed herein are solely the views of DC and Art Scorter. And do not reflect the views of the entire Comic Book Chronicles.
And if you want to discuss it further, make sure you join the Click Nation community at theclicknation.com.
There you go. I was about to say, we're going to make sure to get our plugs in at the end because we jumped past that because I don't think we were completely prepared to do all that when we went on the air.
But this is one of these books, though, that it's like I read it thinking it was just going to be a stupid tie-in for Zero Year. And I came out and I was actually like, mad that I'd spent my time reading it. You know what I mean?
Oh, wow. Yeah, I hate that. That's the worst. You can't get that time back.
It was all over the place and just terrible. So that's my last book for DC.
All right. Well, that's not going to be Dirt's pick of the week, click of the week. Not going to do it. All right. So we are leaving the DC universe. We are jumping to Dynamite. If you have anything Dynamite, let us know.
Anybody? Mueller? Well, I can point out they did have this awesome Battlestar Galactica sub cover.
That's a great cover.
Chris Iliopoulos.
Ah, that is a great cover.
And then they had this other sub cover for Codename Action with Franco.
Oh, right.
Yeah, Comics.
Titans. Right.
Yeah. So either of those books, even if you don't read Codename Action or Battlestar Galactica, you should probably grab them just for those covers because those are awesome.
Those are pretty cool. I agree.
All right, that's all I got from Dynamite, though.
All right, let's see. I wanted to mention something that came out from Fantagraphics this week that I'm going to try to pick up. I haven't been to the store yet this week, but I'm going to go either tomorrow or over the weekend. I wanted to mention the Hip Hop Family Tree graphic novel for $24.99. It's a Treasury edition, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, so it's like one of those big oversized.
Exactly. It's an oversized type book. I read the preview pages for the Hip Hop Family Tree, and I was impressed. You know, for all hip hop fans out there, if you want to know, you know, my understanding is that this is the first of a couple of editions, and this covers the very early days of hip hop, you know, in the South Bronx when, you know, hip hop was really just beginning. And, you know, it's really nice to see, you know, this done in comic book / graphic novel format. It's, you know, I retweeted this earlier today after reading the preview pages. I was that impressed. By this offering from Fantagraphics. So, you know, you guys out there, and I can't legitimately give it a click of the week because I only read a couple of pages.
Yeah, you haven't read the thing yet.
Exactly, I haven't read, but what I read was quality, and I definitely appreciated what they're trying to do. So any hip-hop fans out there, you don't even have to be a fan of hip-hop. You will appreciate that the way this comic book has been, this graphic novel has been executed. So Dirt, you know, if when you get a chance to go over to the Fantagraphic site and just take a look at the preview, I'm pretty, you know, unless you ordered a couple special a couple of copies for your store, I bet you didn't order it.
So. No, it's one of those things that's if it's
at that price point, book, at that price point, I definitely understand.
People have to order it, but. What was covered in what you read?
The very early days of hip hop, Grandmaster, even before Grandmaster Flash, and the early pioneers and innovators, Afrika Bambaataa, just very early stuff. You definitely want to pick this up if you're a hip hop historian, a hip hop head like myself. I look forward to picking it up, and if I can get it this weekend, I will bring it on the show next week and put it up in front of the screen and show it to everyone. So I'm looking forward to that. So I'm happy to be able to talk about something from Fantagraphic Books, to be perfectly honest.
Actually, I'm looking at the preview here on their website right now.
Right.
Actually, I should probably screen share this. Hold on.
There you go. Da-da-da-da-da. So for all you guys out there, I know that Roddy Cat and it seems like Dorgeekus are tuning in right now. Thank you guys for tuning in. So you can take a look at this preview of Hip Hop Family Tree by Ed Piskor from Fantagraphic Books.
It looks like it's made to emulate being old.
Right.
They put a fake texture look to the paper.
Like a newsprint.
Right, like it looks like it's aged. It looks like actually the artwork is from the 70s, the way it draws the boxes and it does the comment boxes at the top with the yellow background.
Definitely.
A lot of that. And then the artwork itself has a kind of underground
quality to it.
Yeah, it's got that kind of like San Francisco underground comic artwork.
Sure.
Look to it. I'm interested. I don't know if you ever saw it. There was a documentary that came out probably about a decade ago. It was called Scratch, and it was all about the early DJs and how it's kind of turned into turntables with DJ Qbert and guys like that who the executioners that just do the mixing and scratching, and how it kind of separated out where you have the rappers and they make all the money, but the DJs are still out there in the clubs doing the music,
right, doing the hard work.
Yeah, and I've always loved the turntables and the mixing and the scratching.
Sure.
And I listen to almost no rap music nowadays. I used to all the time when I was growing up, but I realized that, like, when it comes to Public Enemy, I don't care about Flavor Flav. I like Terminator X. You know what I mean?
I can understand that. And I wonder if that that movie or that documentary is out on Netflix. I would actually subscribe to Netflix just to watch something like that.
I would love to buy it on if I could get a copy on DVD or Blu-ray, but it's been out of print for so long, it's hard to run across. But
I'll look it up on Amazon or eBay and see if that's available somewhere. Cut it up on YouTube. You never know.
I was
going
to say, I saw it a couple times on YouTube where people put up the whole thing as one file from start to finish.
Oh, there you go.
Tends to disappear after a couple weeks because it's got so many musical clips into it. It gets caught by the record agencies.
The lawyers. Damn you, lawyers. Oh, wait, I'm cursing myself.
Yeah. All right, so anyway.
Well, I can't, like I said, I can't give that a click of the week for myself, but I definitely recommend people who are fans of hip-hop to pick that up. That looks very good and very interesting, so I'm glad to promote something from Fantagraphic Books. Hello, Fantagraphics. We can use some promo stuff.
All right.
Anyway,
IDW. I did read the new issue of Star Trek Con.
Ooh.
And here it's funny because the cover. They're doing this art month in IDW, so the cover is actually blank, so you could take it to a convention and get someone to draw on the cover.
Sure.
They have a regular, like, newsstand cover that has the painted cover, but this is what we got in at the store for the subscribers is this blank cover. Right. But it continues the story of
Into Darkness?
Well, it follows right after Into Darkness of the trial of Khan. And they one of the things that they did in the first issue is they pull up this photo of what they have on record of who Khan is, and it's Ricardo Montalban. And they look at Sherlock over there, and they go, "You are not the person that the historical record says is Khan, So who are you?" And so he starts telling the story, and so you find out all about the government labs that were building these, basically these eugenics programs to try to make the super soldiers. And one of the things I remember was in Star Trek The Next Generation, they made some comment about this war on Earth that happened in the early 90s.
The eugenics war.
And yeah. And of course, the show came out in like 88 or, something like that. So they had still had a couple of years to go. But of course, the time has come and passed, and we didn't get that. So obviously, we're not going to space.
That's right.
But here they actually said 1992 is when they set the date for when Khan was part of that eugenics wars movement. And it was his group. They set off a nuke in Washington, D.C. and in Red Square in Moscow. That's basically what sets off the war. And so they kind of did some of that history of the alternate Star Trek universe.
All right. So
I found that pretty interesting to go back because, I'm a big Trekkie at heart. So
sure. I've already revealed myself as knowing something about Star Trek. I definitely watched Next Generation coming up. Right. So, I'm familiar with that part at least. That's interesting.
Better.
I like Deep Space Nine. I did. But in all seriousness, this wouldn't be something I would pick up normally, but now I'm kind of, I'm kind of glad that they're tying in some of the varying continuities together.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool. That is kind of cool. Anything else in IDW?
I wanted to read Triple Helix. That was one of the ones that was on my list to read for today. It's from the John Byrne ongoing superhero universe that started in Trio, and now it's continuing in Triple Helix. I just haven't had a chance to get to it yet. It was what I was going to read before coming on the show, but didn't have time.
Gotcha. Well, yeah, I mean, we're going to have to figure out a way to be more efficient in reading what we need to read before we come on the show. I'm talking more about me than you.
I was going to say, I had a prior engagement that I'd forgotten about, so.
Right, and it's just life getting in the way. What can you do?
All right, so. Image, do you have anything from Image?
No. There's an Image number one.
There are a couple of number ones. We had Umbral, number one, which from the creators of Wasteland. We had Manifest Destiny, number one.
That's an interesting cover.
I just kind of briefly thumbed through it, but what I saw of this is basically Lewis and Clark are making their expedition across what would become the United States, and they're running across, I guess you could say, like the mythological gods of North America before the Europeans came. So like they run across like a giant buffalo man out in the woods and stuff like that. So it's definitely charting its own territory, telling its story. But
Got it. Okay. And you wanted to talk about Walking Dead number 116?
Right before we hit that, let's talk about Rocket Girl.
Okay.
I read the first issue.
I'm the one that always brings into song. Go on.
You're always right on key, too. That's what he is. The first issue, though, I think Tim read this and said how much he liked it. So I went back and read the first issue, and I really liked it, too. So I'm going to be sticking with this series, at least for the foreseeable future. I'm not sure if this is a limited or an ongoing, but I did really enjoy it. And basically this the girl that you see on the cover, Rocket Girl, as she's called here, she's actually a police officer from the future. And in the future, everybody who's running City Hall, running the police force, you know, running whatever, are all 16 to 22-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for whatever reason, it seems like society just keeps pushing younger and younger and younger. So at this point in the future, it's teenagers, you know, young adults that are basically running everything. And she gets caught in a time warp and lands back in 1984. And this issue does a parallel story where something happens in her past. At the same time, something is similar is happening in her current time. But, of course, her past is the future, and her current time is our past.
Hmm.
So it's playing this, you know, it's kind of cutting back and forth between the stories, and it's playing this kind of duality of the two storylines. But, you know, it's weird because what's happened to her hasn't technically happened yet. And what she's going through now is something that's already happened before she was even born, you know. So it does make it interesting the way it plays upon.
Is this a DC comic?
No.
Is this a DC comic?
Maybe that's why I like it so much.
Maybe that entire explanation sounds very New 52.
Actually, it's Austin Powers. Did your eyes go cross while I was trying to explain that?
That's right. I love it. So I'm glad to hear that you like the story, and I guess it's something that I may have to pick up eventually. You wanted to talk about Walking Dead 116.
Yeah, I did want to talk about Walking Dead. I'm one of those people who, when Walking Dead comes out, it's like the first book that I reach for out of the box. Like when I'm inventorying the new comics, we get them on Tuesday. Image will send us review copies of books, but it's never Walking Dead. Like Walking Dead, you have to wait
lame.
For. And so, I know.
It's nice to have the sound back, doesn't it? Isn't it? It's nice.
I have first world problems.
That's right.
So, one of the things that I've always kind of ragged on the book for is the fact that it's a book about the zombie apocalypse that often has very few zombies.
Right.
Like they say, well, it's about the characters, it's about the people and the relationships. I'm like, yeah, whatever. I want to see someone get their face eaten off, you know?
Mm-hmm.
All Out War, there have been these different groups within the zombie apocalypse that have kind of rebuilt themselves, and now they're kind of butting heads against each other about who's going to have control. And they find a way to bring the fact that it's the zombie apocalypse to the middle of this fight that they're having.
Okay.
And I don't want to spoil it and give it away, but there's a scene in the book where the bad guy leader, in the middle of this gunfight, he realizes that there's something else going on. He's like, what the heck are these guys doing? Like, they're not reacting the way they should be for being in the middle of this gunfight. There's obviously something else going on, and what they're doing is finding a way to bring the zombie apocalypse into the middle of this battle. And I really – like, it's so – brilliantly structured that I don't want to say anything more than that, other than the fact that even if you've never read Walking Dead before, or you've only seen the TV show, you've never picked up the comic, even if you don't have an interest in ever reading it again necessarily, at least go to your comic book shop, and when you're picking up your books, pick up this issue and at least thumb through it and read what's happening in the storyline, because I think it's like I hate using the term brilliant, but the way he puts this together is the most fun I've seen in the zombie apocalypse.
So despite the fact that this is a middle issue in this story arc, is this a good jumping on point?
You could jump on here. I think one of the things about the book is that they do have a page at the beginning that kind of recaps what's been going on.
Right, Marvel style. That's a good thing.
Yeah. So even if you're just familiar with the show or you haven't read it before, you can still kind of pick it up and get a general idea. And the book has a tendency, even though it started in like 2003, it's only been like 2 or 3 years in storyline that everything's happened.
Right.
So the book moves along very slowly.
Gotcha.
So you're never going to feel like you're being left behind because they spend so much time. And this is one of the things that people often complain about. They spend so much time discussing what's going on and talking about what's happening to them because that's what real people would do. you know, day to day. And he spends a lot of time showing those conversations and doing that stuff. And that's where you really get the look of what people are thinking, what's going on inside their head. How are they planning these things? How are they strategizing their next move? All that kind of stuff, because every single one of those conversations is in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're new, you've never read it before, you can still pick this up, and I think it'll all make sense to you because everything is continually laid out on the table.
Right.
So I don't think there'd be any problem there. But like I said, even if you have no intention of reading this regularly, I'd still say at least, you know, go to the store that has a friendly shelf reading attitude and sit there and read through this one, because it was just brilliant the way they structured.
Oh, there you go. I think somebody's just giving away their click of the week.
Probably.
Sounds like it. All right. So that's is that it for Image?
Yeah, that's it for Image.
All right. Well, that's a ringing endorsement for Robert Kirkman and The Walking Dead issue 116. Let's
see. You ready for Marvel?
Yeah, if there's anything else in between, doesn't look like it. So we're going to get to one of the few books that I actually read this week. All New X-Men number 18.
Uh-huh.
Right. And it's definitely got, the cover is not completely misleading, because I think there's definitely some emotional baggage that needs to be dealt with.
They wanted to,
in the story,
Battle of the Atom, they wanted you to think that the all new X-Men are gone and they've gone back to the past. And that's what the cover is showing.
Wrong. Yeah. What we find instead is that they're staying here. And one of the things that Dirt and I were talking about before the show started was that, we were discussing, you know, some of the cancellations that had been dropped in conjunction, you know, the news of the cancellations that had been dropped in conjunction with the February Marvel solicits that came out today. And one of the things that we were discussing was that, you know, I had not been very impressed and not all that interested in the uncanny X-Men side of the schism that Bendis was writing. And what we find out here, right? And what we find out here is, and I know this was at the end of Battle of the Atom. What we find out here is that the all new X-Men, the original X-Men, have gone to the Weapon X facility and joined the new incarnation of the Xavier School for Gifted Youngsters, run by Cyclops.
They've gone to the dark side,
pretty much. And Kitty Pryde has gone along with them. And, you know, she's split from being the headmistress of the one of the head teachers. I think she was the former headmistress of the Jean Grey School. And, you know, she's now gone to hang out with Ileana Rasputin, in this book. And I think, you know, this is probably going to make, or I guess re-energize, I think, is the best way to put it. Re-energize the uncanny side of the ledger of the schism, because honestly, I have not been very impressed with the new characters that Bendis has created for Uncanny. And I think this side of the schism would benefit greatly from a kind of an infusion of blood, even though it's old blood / new blood, with the original X-Men and Kitty Pryde now. You know, there's a couple of quality scenes in this book. I actually liked a little bit of character development with Ileana, magic. They actually have her acting human in this book, as opposed to being like the demon devil child that, you know, that she's been the last, you know, couple of months, you know, at least since this, Uncanny relaunched. You know, we're what, 20 issues in now? Jeez. You know, 18, you know, something like that, or... No, we're in the teens, so we definitely got a bunch of issues under our belts, and she's just now starting to become more human again. So.
Dork Geek has just tweeted out that Kitty seems more rational than she did in Battle of the Atom.
Yes, I agree with that. It seems like she's a little bit more, you know.
After reading Battle of the Atom, I just can't bring myself to read another X-Men book right now.
I don't blame you.
I just... I don't blame you. That put such a bad taste in my mouth that, you know, I had enjoyed All New X-Men, for a while.
Right.
But after reading Battle of the Atom, it's just like, I can't take this. I can't do it. Like, I'm done until some big thing happens that redeems the storylines for me, because this is just not
right. This doesn't do it for me. I like this issue because there was a lot of development. I kind of got, you know, I mean, some of it was a lot of like teeny bopper, angsty, you know, relationship stuff in this issue. But it was kind of a nice change of pace from the Battle of the Atom stuff. You know, it's nice to not see, you know, like, who are these evil brotherhood, you know, of evil mutants coming from the future. I'm happy that that's over and done with. Was it Dorkikis who tweeted out that we can't get our time back from reading Battle of the Atom?
Yeah.
I think, I you know, shout out to you, Dorkikis, because I agree. I think we all still have bitter taste in our mouths from reading that.
What? Okay, so one thing that I do know that happened in this book is that the all-new X-Men, the old X-Men, however you want to describe them,
right,
they got new costumes.
Yeah, new old costumes. Makes them look like Voltron.
So what was the point of that?
I don't know. Maybe action figure.
Because taken in the context of what actually happens in this issue, this cover is basically Kitty crying over the fact that their old costumes are going away.
Maybe you could look at it that way.
Because I mean, it doesn't make sense otherwise, because we know that they're not gone.
Yeah. You know?
So it's not like they're gone and the costumes have been left behind and she's mourning the loss of them. She's mourning the loss of, like, oh man, I really like the blue and gold.
Yeah. Maybe. But I mean, I can't give this my click of the week either. Even though it's one of the few books that I read, it was just, I like that there was a lot of stuff happening, but it was a lot of talking. You know, yeah. It's definitely a Bendis book. You know, this particular issue was definitely a Bendis issue.
All right, what else did you read from Marvel?
Let's see. I did not have time to read Cataclysm Ultimate Spider-Man number one. I wanted to really bad. It's definitely on my list.
It was good. It was really good.
Damn, I had a feeling that might end up being my click of the week. You know what I'm saying? Like, that was...
Well, I'd say... As so much annoying. As I enjoyed it, it wouldn't be my click of the week, and I don't think it would have been if there hadn't been Walking Dead. Like, it was good. Well, a couple things to put out there is that, one, Ultimate Comics Spider-Man is done. Like, this right. is taking over its spot in the series. So if right. you read Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, this is the next chapter of that book. So
right.
this very well should have been, you know, Ultimate Comics 26 or whatever it would have been.
Mm-hmm.
Having said that, though, this brings, you know, of course, Galactus in, but Galactus doesn't appear until the final page. So this is kind of the account of all the characters that we've seen over mm-hmm. the last, like, 4 or 5 months, kind of having that breathing moment. Like, they at the end of the last issue, they brought down the Roxxon Corporation, who's been doing all the genetic experiments that, you know, brought forth Cloak and Dagger and
sure.
Spider-Girl and, you know, whoever, Spider-Woman, whoever.
Mm-hmm.
So this was kind of them taking their breath and kind of re-finding their place in the world. And it's like, now that that has finished and that chapter is done, it's like, what's the next chapter in our lives and who are we, and, you know, do we still have a place with the Ultimates, or are we going out on our own, are we going to make a new team, like, what, you know, what exactly is going on with all of our lives and everything like that. And and then of course Galactus kind of comes in at the end. So it was good in the sense that it was that next chapter of the story, and it dealt with all these characters, and it gave you, I think, those important story beats that you want, because it very easily could have had Galactus come in on the first page and suddenly they're all fighting again.
Mm-hmm.
And I like that it didn't do that. You know,
gotcha.
I like that it focused on the characters. So if you are new and you haven't read any of these books and you don't know the story, I mean, this is the type of thing you can pick up, and it says, you know, these are who the characters are, and this is their mm-hmm. background, you know, so you do have that idea to go along with it. So I enjoyed it for what it was and for being the next chapter of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man, but
right.
it nothing big happened in it. You know, nothing really happened in it. It just, it was what it was.
Right. I gotcha. All right. That's interesting. Interesting, interesting. Okay. Well, I'm definitely going to be reading that. No doubt, no doubt.
What did you read?
I read, and my click of the week is Superior Spider-Man number 21. Uh-huh. I enjoyed this, even though I skimmed it. I read it so quickly, I'm definitely going to have to reread it because there is a lot of stuff happening in this book. And I definitely enjoyed I'm enjoying the comeuppance.
No.
I am. I'm enjoying the comeuppance. I'm loving every time I see Spidey Ock getting frustrated. There's a couple of twists in this issue, though, where, you know, some of the things that we thought might be a comeuppance for Ock don't actually happen. And, you know, Ock kind of finds his way around things. Stunner reappears in this issue. And, there's quite a lengthy battle between her and Superior Spidey Ock. Carly Cooper shows up in this, and there is a reappearance of, well, actually, it's, I guess he's been in the background for a while now, but the Green Goblin / Goblin King. And right. It basically sets up the next storyline. In terms of the, you know, like the Goblin, what do they call it in the new year? I forget what the storyline is called.
Oh, you mean what the next big?
The next big event is in Spidey.
I've already forgotten. I don't know.
I forgot. It's Goblin something.
It's something that hasn't happened yet, so I'm not even focused on it here.
Yeah, the next issue has, I guess, involves Venom. But they're definitely laying the groundwork for the Green Goblin story that should hopefully signal the end of Spidey Ock, much to the chagrin of PCN_Dirt.
Huh.
Where's the sad? I need the sad.
I do like the fact that the last issue set everything up like it was going to be Octavius was going to fail.
Mm-hmm.
As Peter Parker trying to get this job, he's going to fail.
Oh, his PhD.
Finishing up at school. He was going to fail, Otto's old girlfriend comes back. Mm-hmm. How are you going to convince her that you're actually Otto and you're still alive, you know?
Right.
All of that kind of stuff it looked like he was backed into a corner he wasn't going to get out of, but he does.
Yes.
He perseveres because he is the superior Spider-Man. He will live on forever.
I'm waiting for it.
It's not happening.
I'm waiting for comeuppance. Waiting for it.
Nope.
Anyway, so in terms of Marvel, I am definitely disappointed that I did not get to read Thor, God of Thunder, number 15, which is a continuation of the Lord of the Rings. The Accursed Part 3.
Is there a cowboy with guns? Who's this guy over here on the side?
It's an elf. It's one of the elves.
Wait, so there's an elf in a cowboy hat with two six-shooters.
Yeah, from what I remember. Trust me, that is the Fellowship of the Ring. I mean, the League of Realms, if I recall. Oh, man.
And you want to read this?
Yes. Seriously, Jason Aaron is not doing anything wrong in Thor, God of Thunder
right now. But there's a cowboy elf.
It is awesome. It is awesome.
And he's got
Garney's doing good work because I think the colorist is doing the bulk of it, is doing the heavy lifting. The Sforcina, the color artist is doing a lot of heavy lifting over Garney's pencils in this. So if I had a chance to read this, maybe this would have been my click of the week. But I'm looking forward to reading this over the weekend and having good stuff to say about it next time.
So did you only read two comics this week?
We're counting the part of Hip Hop Family, right?
No.
Brothers gotta pay the bills. You know, not all of us work in a comic book store.
So you're done with the stuff you actually read?
Yep, pretty much.
You didn't even read X-Men Gold?
What?
X-Men Gold number one? X-Men
Gold. What is that? I did not read X-Men Gold. What? Please speak on this.
It's X-Men. I don't read it.
Oh, lame.
What do you want? Okay, here, wait. Hold on a second. If I can find it real quick here. I've got the solicit for it.
Is this a reprint?
Maybe.
Maybe that's why I didn't read it. Aha! It's a $5.99 book. What the heck is it?
It's part of the 50th anniversary of the X-Men.
What?
I thought you liked the X-Men. Are you lying about that?
I do. But you know, they've done a lot to kind of turn you off. You know, turn off the big time X-Men fans. And I think you know, our listeners and loyal viewers out there can agree.
All right,
X-Men Gold. We don't know what this is in the solicits.
Yeah, well, of course.
That's so sad.
Update my email there. Hold on.
Lame. We don't know. I like the cover though. That's a Coypel cover. That's kind of cool.
Here, stall for a minute.
I'm stalling. That's so, you know, this is cool that the elements of this cover are really, you know, pulling from a lot of different eras of the X-Men. And I can even, you know, there's a lot of actual references, I think, that Coypel pulls from. And you
okay,
know,
if you look all right, hard, here we go.
There you go.
X-Men Gold number one. It's the 50th anniversary of the X-Men. Ring it in with some of the greatest creators to ever work on the X-Men. Chris Claremont is joined by classic X-artist Bob McLeod to bring an untold story of the X-Men starring Cyclops, Wolverine, Nightcrawler, Colossus, Kitty Pryde, and Rogue. Also, jam-packed with all-star creators from X-Men past, including Stan Lee, Walter Simonson, Louise Simonson, and Fabian, however you pronounce his last name.
Nicieza.
Sure.
Nicieza?
So there's a new, apparently, Chris Claremont, Bob McLeod story,
ooh,
and then reprints of some of the old stuff.
In the past. That's how they justify the $5.99 price tag.
Yeah,
kind of lame, but this is something I'm going to have to look up. I'll be interested to see what.
You're an X-Men guy.
That's right. All you X fans out there want to pick this up. See if there's any dangling plot lines in there to that they might pick up on.
What was the Chris Claremont story that he did a couple years ago where he picked up X-Men? From the point of like X-Men number 3 or whatever.
I don't think I ever read a single issue of that because it went off into just a complete La La Land. It just did. There was all sorts of things that happened. It's, you know, Claremont has come back to the X-Men over and over and it just hasn't worked. So, you know, I look back on what he did with, you know, fond memories, and I definitely am still picking stuff up, you know, in terms of back issues. You know, I love showing off the stuff I pick up. Give me a second to dig.
So I guess I have to stall now.
No, you don't have to stall because I'm just going to keep yipping.
Hey, kids, comics are awesome.
Right, while I go off camera to pull.
As we watch the back of his head, which is the most attractive part.
Oh, that's right. So let's see if.
Seeing him on there.
One of the co-hosts of Comic Chronicles will actually pull out a physical comic book. Look at what I pulled from a back issue bin. Ooh.
Hey, look, this week's comics, new comics. Ooh.
I've got old ones. Now, this is some classic stuff. Uncanny X-Men. Actually, it's just not even Uncanny. It's all new, all different X-Men. Number 111. Look at this stuff. This is some great, I believe this is definitely Dave Cockrum and Chris Claremont at their finest. It's one of the classic books. And I picked this up for relatively cheap and decent condition, so I'm happy to fill in another hole in my Uncanny X-Men collection.
So you don't know who you're talking to. I got Batman 272 this week. I got Adventure Comics 435 this week.
Wow. We got in that collection, man.
Invincible Iron Man 67.
Wow.
68.
Mm.
We got Amazing Spider-Man 136.
Wow, that's going back. 136.
133. and 136
is a great issue.
131 with Doc Ock and Aunt May.
Wow.
So there you go. So you talk about comics, old comics.
Huh? Hey, man, listen, we should make this a regular feature of the show. We show off anything that we pulled, you know, if we bought any old back issues recently.
But we got to do it like a one-up. Like, hey, look what I bought. Oh, yeah, that's what you bought? Look what I got.
Listen, it's so rare that I pick up back issues because I have to find I have to find these uncanny issues because that's pretty much the only back issues that I'm going to pick up.
You don't have a tiny little big-headed Green Lantern figure.
Oh, my goodness. Is that Ryan Reynolds?
So,
is that supposed to be to scale?
If you... In your heart of hearts, you wish.
Oh, but I'm both.
All right. So,
okay, hold on. We got tweets before we go. And remember, we have to plug every single thing we normally plug because we forgot to do it at the top of the show. We have tweets from Dirk Geekus. Wolverine died in that book and Kitty replaced him. Kurt and Rogue switched powers. Cable is still a kid. I think we're talking about X-Men Gold.
Oh, X-Men Forever.
X-Men Forever. That's right. That was the. That's it. Dark Geek has enjoyed Ultimate Spider-Man this week. I'd love to have read that. Ultimate Tony is a tad pervy, creepy. Yeah, that's nothing new. I think that's pretty consistent with the character, right?
The Ultimates finally learn out that Spider-Woman of the Ultimate Universe is a clone of Peter Parker.
Right.
And so Tony like figures out that she's a clone of Peter Parker, and somehow. Not only is it awesome that she's a clone and she's alive and you know she's got spider powers, but also he's somehow more attracted to her to find out that she's a clone of Peter Parker.
Oh, mercy. You gotta love it. You gotta
Man's
love
got
it.
Needs. What are you gonna do?
Yeah, what are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? They gotta keep that character consistent.
Brian, what's your favorite character in the Marvel
Universe? Oh! All right. So listen, I think we've had a good show. We don't need Tim.
Like, Tim's the one that brings the show down.
But he's the one that plugs all the stuff. So now we have to go through that. I don't remember three quarters of what he plugged.
All right, let's see.
So let's plug. Right.
First of all, make sure you go to theclicknation.com. There you're going to find all of Tim's reviews. You're going to find the interesting articles he finds on the internet that he posts there. You're also going to find that his webpage hasn't been updated in like 2.5 years. So he's got this scroll bar at the top with really old comic covers that mean absolutely nothing either. But then also make sure you find the Click Nation community on Google+. You can go to Google+ and look for The Click Nation. You can also check him out. It's Twitter. It's at The Click Nation. You can also find him at
TimDog98. Tim, right? D-O-G-G-98.
I believe that's his Twitter handle. Yeah. You can also find me at PCN_dirt on Twitter. I am also part of the Pop Culture Network that you can find at popculturenetwork.com. There's that. You can also find us on Google Plus at Pop Culture Network 1. Which, for whatever reason, Google Plus made us put the one after our URL, but there you go. Then I myself, I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on LinkedIn, I've got the MySpaces, I've got the, I'm my own Foursquare check-in. So make sure you find all that awesome stuff. And then, of course, the man with the sound effects, that's Agent_70, Nicholas Fury himself.
That's right.
You can find him on Google Plus under Nicholas Fury. Actually,
that's right.
I found that out today. I didn't realize that. So look for Nicholas Fury. There's actually a lot of Nick Furies and Nicholas Furies on Google Plus. So be careful because you might end up with the pervy one.
Or the LMDs. But I'm boom. So I have something to ask before we go. Did you watch Thor: The Dark World?
I did not.
Neither did I, so I think we can save this to at least next week's show or the week after, because I don't know when I'm going to have a chance to see it.
I'll be
good things.
I'll be 100% honest that if we look at the Marvel movies, mm-hmm. of the first X-Men movie, the first Thor movie, the first Iron Man movie, the Avengers movie, Captain America, you know, out of all of those first movies, Thor was the one I liked the least.
Okay.
Iron Man, I think Iron Man 3 is probably a worse movie than Thor was. I don't think there's a lot of discussion about that. But
I agree.
You know, overall, it's like I watched the first one. I walked out of the theater just kind of, you know, eh, it was whatever. And when they announced that they were doing, you know, the second one, and I'm just not excited. Like, I'll watch it at some point, but it's not a movie that I feel I need to pay $10.75 to watch on the big screen.
I'm excited for it because I really like Chris Hemsworth's portrayal of Thor. What I do not like is Natalie Portman in this movie. And that's fair. I know that she's going to bring down my level of enjoyment of this movie, and maybe that's what's keeping me from, you know, breaking down the doors to go watch it. Yeah. It's kind of sad. You know, I like Hemsworth as Thor. He's convincing as Thor. That's what, once you accomplish that, I'm sold on the character and most of the movie. I just get drawn, you know, my suspension of disbelief is suspended when Natalie Portman starts jibber-jabbering about something that I don't believe that she would ever say.
I don't know. I still think the best cinematic Thor was Vincent D'Onofrio in Adventures of Babysitting.
Ah! Good one, good one. All right, so we're going to wrap up the show. We are up late tonight. We got started late, but we definitely put in our Comic Book Chronicles time. Thank you to Dork Geekas. Thank you to Roddy Cat. Thank you to all the people that support the show. Tim D-O-double-G will be back next week.
For the history of hip-hop, I'm just going to say with Tim not being here, he gets the gas face.
Ah, nice. 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 That's a great reference right there. Shout out to Third Base. So, again, we'll be back next week. Thank you for joining us. For at @PCN_dirt. This is @Agent_70, and we are signing off. Peace. IDW. JC. DC. Marvel. Baby, yes. Justice League. Valiant. Dark One. Comic Book Chronicles has dopest trace chronic, yo. I'm steady tripping over them pages and dogging Adam Black. No, yeah. Graphic or not, this is motherfucking comic book art. The man, Stan Lee, Jack Kirby, Jim Lee. Don't give a as long as them pages are hot and it's written by Chris Claremont, Jeff Johns, Alan Moore.